cops on the mall arresting people for violating stay-away orders.
Yes, which not, is not just regular cops. We're talking the neighborhood enforcement team, Officer Bauer and Officer Parker, Santa Cruz Police Net Team, who normally would be down here undercover, busting people for sales of marijuana, whatever, and they go to court, they get stay-away orders, and these are the cops that are primary in that, so they'd be the only ones, remember, whoever this, the people that have stay-away orders. The regular cops wouldn't. I guess they've had haven't had too many stay-away order issues down here, so they had to put the net team out here, hang out here, and arrest people for that. And anything else? Now,
how many times today have you seen either stay-away arrests or tickets?
I saw one stay-away arrest this morning. They call it a probation violation because that's part of the terms of probation, is to stay away from Pacific Avenue. Although he was told previously, earlier, I guess they slept in the back parking lot in a truck, and the cops came and rousted him, woke him up, and they found out he had a stay-away order, and they let him go. They said, oh, okay, well, you're all right. You know, you guys aren't doing anything bad. You're not bad people. So they let him alone. But when it comes to the net team, they take a different course of action.
Like a more serious view.
Yes. And then they were handing out tickets for, like, getting said for putting a cigarette in a trash can, which if you didn't, you'd put it on the sidewalk, and then you get a littering ticket.
Right.
So, and then Skippy got one for just stepping out in the street, like everybody does, like every yuppie you see walk across the street. And then I tried to ask them, how come they're not at Lincoln and Pacific? How come not at Cooper and Pacific? Why is it just Cathcart and Pacific?
They like that corner.
What draws them there?
Maybe it's sort of like, you know, hippies get drawn there, and police officers, it's a draw. We're drawing all these corrupt and violent police officers.
Well, why does the net team get to wear faded jeans and goatees? I never understood that part either.
It's kind of a fashion kind of thing.
You got to look good, I guess.
You're going to be at that downtown legislative concerns committee tomorrow, social and legislative concerns.
I hope to.
What are you going to tell those people, Bob?
Can
record what
they
say?
I'm just going to sit and listen, be an ear.
A little fly on the wall.
Yeah, that's what I try to do most of the time until it gets a little unbearable.
Fly to the wall.
Until the bullshit gets so thick that I have to say something.
Right.
And then I usually do.
There's Officer Lefebvre across the street.
Yeah, he got a haircut.
Chris Burns apparently has gone down big time again at City Council. Any comments on that?
No, I know that the sergeant was the primary on the call, and he's going to jail right now, and they're probably going to hold on to him again for a while because, well, he didn't bother anybody, although silent alarms went off. As I was listening to police radio, they said the silent alarm went off, and
he was
211.
He was threatening person after person, actually. He came up and threatened me, which is fine. I wouldn't complain.
Yeah, you're used to it.
You know, I'm used to it. I mean, you threatened me. I mean, hey, that little girl.
I've never threatened you.
You're very existence.
Give you shit is all I give you.
You never give me the tapes I want. I call you up. I leave messages.
Well,
love me.
You never put my interviews on your tapes either.
Always. I always have a Bob Duran interview. It's top of the hour, man. It's the classy aspect of the entire
show. I thought we were
going
to get another, another exciting arrest from Chris Brosda again when he started taking his flashlight out again. But looks like Officer Lefebvre showed some restraint this time.
Well, there are a lot of council members and other people watching.
Oh, yeah, with tape recorders
and video cameras. Right. It is true, however, that I testified in court today on behalf of Chris, who phoned in, as you may remember, 2 months ago when he was being pepper sprayed by Richardson in the foyer of Golden West at, 1 in the morning on one Saturday morning.
Right.
For the crime of going the wrong way on a... He made an illegal left turn on...
Oh, my God.
Well, you know,
You shot him.
Well, they're pretty mellow in this town, you know.
I guess Feed the People serving now.
Every Tuesday is what
they
say.
They're going to start
that's
doing
good
it.
Good news.
Yeah.
Anything else from the Cop Watch circuit, Uncle Bob?
The what? I'm sorry?
From your Cop Watch vantage point. I regard you as the Cop Watcher par excellence.
You could say that. I'm just an informational gatherer.
IG.
Yeah, IG. That's me. IG. I like that.
Cool. You're the Iggy man.
Iggy. I like to watch what's going on. I keep my, you know...
My hands
in everybody's pie, you know?
Yeah, finger in the dike.
CNET is doing their own little operation in the beach flats. That's why the net team's there. I figured I put two and two together. I go, wait, the net team's not in the beach flats busting the poor Mexican people. Who could be there but CNET, California Narcotics Enforcement Team? Who, by the way, Officer Haley, remember Officer Haley?
I do.
He is now working for CNET now. He is now the primary
CNET guy. Step up or
step
down?
Yeah, he's moved up in the world, and I guess he left all his other cronies behind, you know. Berticelli and Clark. I haven't seen Clark around.
Sergeant.
Kind of missed him.
Man of the Year, Clark?
Is he Man of the Year?
No, that was Baker, I'm sorry. Clark was Man of the Year, too. I know Baker was.
There's the two officers that made Officer of the Year. Hey, what's up, Bear? Nice hat. Officer Azua and Rodriguez made Cops of the Year because they're the token Mexican-American cops on the police force down in Beach Flats. So, of course, they got to make Cops of the
token?
Year.
You mean they're still smoking on duty?
I don't know about that.
We'll find out, huh?
Sometimes that pot doesn't always make it to the evidence room.
Sometimes
it might be a little light. You never know.
Well, thank you, Cop Watch Bob.
Thank you. IG Bob.
Sorry about that.
Thank you, Robert.
All right, sir.
And that was an interview on the mall with Cop Watch Bob, Skidmark Bob, or Iggy, as he's now called, our man on the scene down there. He's always gathering this and that about every police officer you can imagine and keeping his ear tuned to the police scanner. This is Bathrop's Pierre's Broadsides, a weekly show on civil rights for the poor in Santa Cruz. My name is Bathrop's Pierre Robert Norris. We come on the air every Sunday at 11 o'clock and give you about an hour and a half, 2 hours of ongoing chatter, song, story, and poetry around what it means to be poor in Santa Cruz these days, and it isn't always the best experience. The second half of the show, we've been doing this recently, is designed to go out to other cities, so we're going to do the local portion first, update you on what's going on, and then kind of throw in some stuff that might be of a broader interest to people in different cities as well. This show exists because some people care enough to speak out about conditions that need to be changed. Louis Untermeyer wrote a poem about that called Prayer, which I'm going to begin the show with. This is how it goes. God, though this life is but a wraith, although we know not what we use, although we grope with little faith, give me the heart to fight and lose. Ever insurgent let me be, make me more daring than devout. From sleek contentment keep me free, and fill me with a buoyant doubt. Open my eyes to visions girt with beauty and with wonder lit. Let me always see the dirt and all that spawn and die in it. Open my ears to music, let me thrill with spring's first flutes and drums, but never let me dare forget the bitter ballads of the slums. First compromise and things half done, keep me with stern and stubborn pride, and when at last the fight is won, God, keep me still unsatisfied. That's a poem, looks like from the mid-30s or 40s, by Louis Untermeyer, a poet of another generation. And I'll be frank with you, this poem is dedicated to my father, Stephen, who loves it, and, hey, that's for you, Steve. A second poem is called Street Saxophone, and it's by a poet I often read on the show. Her name is Julia Vinograd, from her book The Blind Man's Peep Show. It goes, Street Saxophone. He's lean and mean at his own horn clasp between denim knees, blasting and moaning. The saxophone's bright as the sweat off ruined buildings in summer, and rank as the overturned, overripe cardboard carton of strawberries a six-year-old rubs into her face while her mother stares at him like a hypnotized rabbit. Many pretty women disappeared down that horn and never were seen again. You can hear them wailing, their wrists and ankles bound with cords of music. He is the voice of the graffiti he leans against, torn, swearing, scrawled, singing. His horn screams like a soul demanding the best seat in hell. He's got a small black eyebrow on his chin to match the two over his shades. He raises all three. He doesn't believe in anything. He doesn't have to. His fingers almost bruise the metal, always bruise the melody. The love songs lost themselves under his hands and never were found again. You'll notice their pictures on pathetic milk cartons later, captioned, Have you seen me? Please do something. Drink the milk. It's good. Listen to the music. And now some local updates and announcements. Tonight, on June 1st, Sunday at 7 o'clock, there's going to be a demonstration for the rights of poor people on behalf of Mumia Abu-Jamal and in support of the Diné people fighting in Big Mountain to stop the relocation of their families, the forcible relocation by the federal government. My interest in this demonstration is the homeless aspect of it. It's going to be happening again at 7 o'clock, Sunday, June 1st, at the head of Pacific and Front Streets at the monument right across from the Memorial Building, the Veterans Building. And everyone's invited. Come on down. And what we're talking about here, what we're concerned about, are issues we've been fighting for a long time. The right to be in public spaces without being harassed, without being told to move along, without being messed with, without being ticketed, cited, threatened with jail. And this is something that's been happening increasingly lately, and we'll be doing interviews on this later. You heard a bit about it from Bob Duran at the beginning of the hour. The city is now being stalked by NET Narcotics Enforcement Team people who aren't enforcing drug laws, but are enforcing jaywalking laws and things of this sort down at the corner of Cathcart and Pacific in order to move along certain people. So come on down to this June 1st demonstration today and bring your friends. Another demonstration is happening at June 10th, actually in the form of a public hearing. There's a public hearing on welfare reform implementation at the Santa Cruz County Government Center. That's the fifth floor of the county building where the supervisors, the board supervisors, meet. That's happening at 7:30 on Tuesday, June 10th. And it's wheelchair accessible. You can actually write them if you can't come. This is a very important hearing, according to the people I've spoken to. It's a hearing on how welfare cuts are going to affect the hundreds, if not thousands, of people affected in this county. And questions asked on the flyer I've got here say, what does the county need to do so that parents on welfare in Santa Cruz County can begin working within 2 years and become self-sufficient? What do we need to do as a community? If people on welfare are working part-time or part of the year, how can we help them increase their hours to over 20 hours per week year-round? If parents cannot yet support their families completely on their wages, what skills or assistance do they need to move up, increase their wages, and become self-sufficient within 5 years? These are questions that the bureaucrats don't have a clue about. They need real input from people on welfare, people who've been on welfare, people who are really aware of those circumstances. And more important, people on welfare have got to get together to demand what they need in this situation, or they're going to get run over by this Mack truck that's coming down the road. Flyer also notes, did you know that federal welfare reform requires parents on aid to work a minimum of 20 hours a week or more? That federal law says that if a parent on public assistance is not working within 2 years, their welfare check may be reduced substantially. That welfare is now limited to 5 years total by federal law. That in California, parents on welfare can increase their income substantially by working while on aid, be paid back for child care, and keep their aid longer as they begin to work in most cases. The child care and medical services can now be provided free or at low cost for up to 2 years after someone gets a job and goes off aid in most cases, and that the Santa Cruz County Human Resources Agency can help parents find work and then upgrade their skills to get a better job or in some cases finish school or training and then find work. But I suggest to you that this is not a self-correcting, self-starting situation, that people who are affected by this have to get together to insist upon what they need in this situation, or they're going to find that they're not going to get what they need. So again, that's June 10th, Tuesday, 7:30, Board of Supervisors, 5th floor, 7:30 p.m. And if you want some assistance or more information, give a call to 454-4036, 454-4036. While we're at it, I'll give out the number for this show in case you want to have anything put on the air. If you're responding to anything that's being said here, or you have something that you think should be said that is not being said, you can be on the air at 11 o'clock on Bathrop Spears Broadside. Though, frankly, we may be going on vacation soon. The show is... we've been doing this for 2 years, and I'm afraid our outreach has not expanded substantially. So I'm becoming a bit discouraged, and I'm thinking that probably going to pass on this in the near future. Also, the radio station itself, though struggling hard to keep things going, and my commendations to those at the station who keep the station going, the station is really something of a shadow of its former self. Most of us don't have access to the studio. We play these loop tapes, and you are indeed listening to a loop tape now. And it's not really, the question begins to arise, is it worth the time to speak out on the air if we can actually talk to so few people? We can have no real interchange via a telephone call-in, if we can't speak out live, it's a real question for me. So, I'm not entirely sure. I think we're probably going to be winding down the show and hoping that some of the information we get out on the show will go out in written form. You can always contact HUF, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom. That's the group that the show really comes out of. And you can call us at 423-4833 or 423-HUF, if that's easier to remember. If you see an instance of police abuse, if you're concerned about your rights as a poor person, if you want to join in the struggle for more rights for poor and homeless people, give us a call at 423-HUF. And again, if you hear something on the air that you want to respond to, I can put together a special tape for that purpose in the future. So, yeah, let's do some updates then. Let's do some updates about what's been happening recently. There's been a controversy at Beat It, as you may remember. Beat It is a store downtown across from a coffee roasting company that sells beads and was accused by an African-American woman of discriminatorily demanding her backpack. And we've been trying to cover that. We did some extensive interviews a couple weeks ago, but we haven't been able to get much further with that. We haven't heard back from any of the principals, although letters from the Beat It sympathizers have been appearing in the paper supporting the store and commending them for their non-discriminatory policies and rejecting the very idea that there could be discrimination. The original story on this case was a couple weeks ago in the Sentinel by Tracy White, and actually made it quite clear that it looked like Beat It was, at least one employee had acted improperly in this issue. Hard to tell who's right, but I'm always put off when stores start demanding your backpacks, demanding your bags, demanding your purse. It really makes me annoyed, and frankly, if women can carry their purses into the store, I don't see why men can't carry their bags into the store. And I suppose there's a shoplifting problem, and I'm not a merchant, so I don't have that problem. Maybe my perspective would be different if I did, but I hate being treated like a criminal just for walking into a store. I mean, it's, shoplifters take a certain risk. They risk jail, and they get caught frequently, and they go to jail. And that's how it goes with them. The idea that all of us should then start living in a police state and have to act like we're in jail the minute we enter a store, subjecting ourselves to searches and leaving our bags at the store counter, is a little bit much for me to swallow. I have the same problem with metal detectors in courthouses. The metal detector in our county courthouse, for instance, was put in after, I guess, Jack Jacobson got a letter bomb and his hand got blown off some months back, which had nothing to do with the courthouse. Jacobson was a lawyer, I suppose. you can draw a tenuous connection, but there's never been a bomb set off in the Santa Cruz County Courthouse. No one's ever shot anybody in the Santa Cruz County inside the courthouse that I've ever heard of. Instead, we all have to form long lines and get dressed down and searched by armed men, mostly men, at the metal detector as we go in. And this has resulted in cases like that of Jane Kaiser, who was twice jacked up for her medical marijuana and has had to pay a penalty for it. She's probably gone on probation or something as a consequence. I still haven't gotten the report, but she's done a deal with that. But the idea of subjecting oneself to searches, it's police state stuff. Innocent people should not have to suffer this, except under extraordinary circumstances. You know, I mean, if there's some specific legitimate emergency in an area, that's one thing. But to have it become a daily routine is really bad news, and I have not forgotten it, and I hope you, the public, have not forgotten it. When you go through those metal detectors, make it real clear you think the whole process is onerous, stupid, unnecessary, and abusive of basic rights. It is. There's no reason for it. It's like building more prisons to put more drug offenders in them, to hire more prison guards, to expand the military prison establishment. It sucks. That's how I view it. Anyway, you're listening to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM, and I'm your host, Bathrobes Pierre Robert Norse. This is the Sunday, June 1st edition of Bathrobes Pierre's Broadsides. stay with it. Now, I promised I was going to make announcements, and instead I got off into these little tirades, which I will do, and probably should do. Santa Cruz City Council met last Tuesday on the 27th. It meets, for all you council watchers, the second and fourth Tuesdays of every month, which means that sometimes there's a two-week and sometimes a three-week difference, and they're going to be going away on vacation probably in August. And the budget is coming up, too, around the city, and that's going to be important to keep an eye on. But this city council had the report that many of us were interested in, the report from the special March 4th session on homelessness. That was a six-hour session by the Santa Cruz City Council on March 4th. That was sort of a sop to the liberal minority, the three members who were completely muzzled by Councilmember Mike Rutkin and Mayor Cynthia Matthews last winter when they tried to introduce changes in the sleeping ban sections of the camping ban. That's the law that makes it illegal for all homeless people to sleep outside or in their vehicles after 11 o'clock at night under pain of a $162 fine. This in a city where there are more than 750 homeless people and less than 28 of them can sleep legally each night in the emergency shelter program. There is no emergency shelter for virtually everybody. And those who don't face the threat of tickets, harassment, or just the general loss of dignity and safety that goes with knowing they are in an illegal status. Anyway, this latest city council meeting had a report back from that six-hour session, which, as I said, was done because Rutkin and Matthews would not allow a real discussion of the real winter shelter emergency. They don't want to deal with it. They don't want to look at it. They don't want to think about it. And they certainly don't want to publicize it. So instead they said, well, we'll have another forum where it can be discussed rather than a real forum where there might be some action taken. And it was somewhat discussed at the six-hour March 4th session. And then the report was delayed and delayed, and finally Kennedy came out with it. He was the man entrusted with writing it. And it came out at the last city council session. And on May 27th, Mayor Matthews decided to cram everything onto the afternoon agenda. City council sessions are divided into a 3:30 session and a 7 o'clock session. Usually laws and public hearings are at 7 o'clock, and what's called administrative business and such is at 3:30. And usually oral communications, which is the time the public actually has to speak on the subjects of its own choosing, is at 7 o'clock on the evening session. Well, Mayor Matthews decided to cram everything into the 3:30 session and eliminated the 7 o'clock session entirely. This, of course, shortened any discussion of the homeless item when it came back. It also meant that oral communications was not on at 7 o'clock in the evening. Instead, it was put into the vague spot of being at the end of the afternoon city council session, whenever that session was. The debate on the report by Kennedy, well, there wasn't much of a debate. Kennedy had just simply picked and he chose among the different things that came out of the council session what he felt was important. And none of that involved criminalization of poor people, which was a major focus of the session. Two of the speakers, well, three or four of the speakers actually, but certainly two speakers who were called in from other cities, Judy Appel from the Coalition on Homelessness in San Francisco, and Catherine Bender of the National Law Center on Homelessness and Poverty, all the way from Washington, D.C., got funded by the City Council to come here and talk about criminalization. And the city's response, of course, was to completely ignore them. Throughout the last year, the 7.5-month-long City Hall sleepers protest, which raised some really clear issues. Are people actually being ticketed, as Mike Rutkin, then mayor, claimed in areas where there were actual complaints being made, or so-called high complaint areas, six or seven of them, with everybody else being left alone? City Council refused to examine that. Should there be an amnesty for past tickets, as was done in San Francisco under Mayor Willie Brown for sleeping? Nope. Council didn't want to look at that one either. Were the laws being fairly enforced, for example? Were people just being arrested as protesters in order to quell protest? City Council had no interest in that issue. Were blankets being taken as to punish homeless people for being a part of a protest or in other circumstances? Not interested, said Mike Rutkin. In fact, the entire City Council, with one exception, actually with two exceptions, didn't even talk about that issue, even though it was the main reason that the March 4th study session, or the March 4th special session, happened. that was the main pretext given for it, because, oh, we can't talk about this matter in ordinary city council session, so we'll have a special long city council session to consider it. That was what Kennedy said. Kennedy was the vote that we thought, it's kind of been wandering all over the block on the sleeping ban issue. When he came into office in 1990, he was in fact probably the most liberal member on the city council, speaking out on behalf of protesters, homeless protesters at the town clock, and his was truly a liberal voice, along with Byers, who has a checkered record, but has actually retained a more liberal voice than Kennedy's. Then Kennedy sold out on the police review issue and helped pass a completely defanged Citizens Police Review Board. When he became mayor, he helped to pass anti-homeless laws against spare changing at night, peacefully, against spare changing from a seated position, peacefully. He helped to pass the HOSTS program, which is the snitch program for the cops. He helped to pass laws that made it illegal to sit down on Pacific Avenue, and then passed a second law once that first law was found unconstitutional, making it illegal to sit 10 feet from a shop. And throughout this period, not a peep about the sleeping ban publicly. However, he would tell protesters at demonstrations that he not only favored ending the sleeping ban sections of the camping ban, he favored ending the entire camping ban. He was a great liberal on that issue. Well, apparently not anymore, because there was a brief, throughout the last year, he supported these anti-homeless actions and anti-protest actions against the City Hall Sleepers protest. He favored an injunction that the City Council eventually got from court, making it illegal for people to sleep outside City Hall and punishing them by up to six months in jail and a $1,000 fine for the first offense. He helped tear down personally a sign that said legalize sleeping. Should it be a crime to sleep? Exact wording eludes me, but that was the general content of the sign. He goes after me, of course, personally at council meetings, which isn't really that significant, but he also goes after other activists, completely ignoring the realities of what it's like to be sleeping on the streets. He has misstated, and some have said lied, about how many people are getting tickets each month. He said two or three, or a handful. He said that only on two or three occasions in the last two or three years have there been places, have the programs been full with people wanting to get in. It's preposterous. It happens every night. It happens every night throughout the spring, summer, and fall, because there are only, as I said before, 28 spaces for more than 750 people. So this March 4th session, which was reported back to us on the 27th, 4 or 5 days ago, last Tuesday, had nothing about any of these issues, really. There was one minor thing which made the cut to figure out if it would be good to create a program that would allow people who receive tickets for violating the camping ban to work off their fines. Actually, Catherine Byers amended this by saying, oh, we're just actually thinking about parking. Because the parking ticket process, as many of you know, has been kind of privatized. You can no longer really get to court easily. It's a private process, and you have to pay these fines endlessly. And so they just sort of start mounting up and get on your license. And if you're a homeless person, then you can't. If you haven't got a license, then you can't be legally move your vehicle. And your vehicle gets towed. It's quite a show if you're watching, and quite a misery if you're in the midst of it. So the March 4th session ended in kind of a complete whimper on May 27th. And the only two people who really got into the sleeping ban at all were Celia Scott, who kind of made a brief apology for not saying anything about the sleeping ban in terms of recommendations, because she said, oh, even though I favor changing it, nobody else does, so I won't talk about it. Well, thanks a lot, Celia. That's that's not the way to go, Celia. Sorry. I'm afraid you have to speak out about it so that others will be educated and learn about it, and that the community will see that your conscience makes you speak out about it loudly, strongly, persistently, accurately, and in great detail, so that the rest of the council is shown up for what they are, gutless cowards on this issue. I'm afraid that some people call that name-calling. You should talk to the people who are getting harassed outside at night. It's not name-calling. It's calling a spade a spade. It's calling a politician. It's calling a lie a lie. That's what that is. The second person who spoke about this issue was Michael Rodkin, who I call the shadow mayor of the Santa Cruz City Council. Michael Rodkin responded to comments made by Citizens Committee for the Homeless board member and homeless activist and video journalist Becky Johnson. Johnson spoke about, quoted the comments made by the National Law Center for Homelessness and Poverty's attorney, Catherine Bender, the woman who was invited to come to Santa Cruz and give the city the analysis of what criminalization is all about for the homeless. And Rodkin's response to Johnson's reminding us all that Bender had come in vain and talked about the issue was, those folks in Washington, D.C. really like our camping ban, or they have got no problems with our spirit-changing ban. And the reason that we aren't passing some changes in the blanket ban, which makes it illegal for people to cover up with blankets after 11 o'clock at night, is because the courts need that, and the police need that in order to convict people, because it's hard to prove they're sleeping. Utterly ignorant statement, and preposterous even if it were true. You don't deny people blankets in order to make it easier for police to convict them of sleeping. But in fact, 99% of the tickets that do hit the courts, and it's at least three or four a week, at least by my experience as I go in to check the court calendars, and I only go in three or four days, I notice one every day that I go in, they use the sleeping ban provisions, not the blanket ban provisions. These are both part of the same so-called camping ban law. So Rodkin is ignorant as well. But when he masquerades as intelligent, one tends to think that after he's heard so much about this issue, I've spoken to him about it many times at city council and in personal discussions, it's hard to believe he's ignorant. One has to believe that he's intentionally lying about these issues or so oblivious to them that he's wildly reckless in his statements and doesn't care what impact he has on the homeless community and the general public's understanding of it. Anyway, he made a series of misstatements, and then there are some of us who waited till the bitter end of that May 27th meeting in order to make our response at oral communications. And what he did was similar to what he'd done in December. He cut us off by saying, getting the mayor to say, hey, you can't talk about homelessness since we've already discussed it in this brief public hearing we had. That's, again, both a misstatement of the law, which says that you shouldn't discuss items that are on the agenda at oral communications, the public comment section, but you can discuss items that are not on the agenda, and indeed homelessness was not really the item that was being discussed. Rather, was the recommendations of the March 4th session. Those were briefly discussed, briefly mentioned, and then, of course, the council members took all the time in the world to denounce them or to ignore them, as the case may be. Rodkin wanted to make sure that the public couldn't respond to that, and he had Matthews rule that we couldn't talk about homelessness. Well, so that sent almost everybody home, or as I should say, out into the bushes. I stayed and spoke, and there was one man who was so upset that he was arrested afterward. That was Chris Brozda. What happened to him was he was speaking and attacking Rodkin's approach to this, and Rodkin got up and left, ending the quorum of city council. So Cynthia Matthews then gaveled Brozda to silence, saying, our meeting has ended because Mike Rodkin has left. In other words, instead of sending the sergeant-at-arms to get Rodkin to come back in to finish the meeting, to keep the quorum, Brozda was silenced. And as a consequence, I don't want to say that Brozda was saying whatever Brozda was saying, and it was rather incoherent, frankly, but whatever he was saying, he had a right to say. And the idea that the council should shut down homeless speakers, and Brozda was the only person who spoke at the mic, well, one of two people who spoke at the mic who was homeless, is ridiculous. And it quite revealing. It shows you what the council is all about. Brozda was shortly thereafter arrested for battery on the complaint of Hernandez, a council member who said not a word throughout the entire council on homelessness. Apparently his main contribution is now going to be helping to pass a youth curfew. He and Kennedy have cooked up a youth curfew and essentially closed session of the public safety subcommittee meeting. Not officially closed, mind you. It was noticed in the sense that they mentioned it when and where it was supposed to be held. But those of us who are trying to follow that Public Safety Subcommittee and the youth curfew were not informed of when it was happening, even though we specifically requested of Hernandez, Kennedy, and the city council staff that this happen. So they did this essentially in a fast, quick move, and it was mentioned in the Sentinel last week. Anyway, Brozda's in jail. He was jailed on a battery charge, released, and then apparently re-jailed. So he's locked up again. This is the activist who was held for 10 weeks before for making an illegal left turn and then refusing to talk to the cop about it. He was pepper sprayed into the bargain. Brozda has problems. He gets abusive and aggressive, and that's a problem. Whether he should be spending years in prison for it or weeks in jail for it, or whether the police should be hounding him and putting him in a position where he's... where I have to talk about him on this show, please do me the favor of leaving Brozda alone so I can leave him alone as well. And leave homeless people alone. That's really the issue. Let them survive. Let them try to make their way. The Homeless Community Resource Center got funding, I guess it was, in the last 2 weeks. And as I said in the last show, that's a great thing. I'm glad that the Downtown Association helped raise about a third of the money, and that I guess there were two benefactors who gave $10,000 each. And that's to be commended. True. No ifs, ands, or buts about that. Showers, phone access, place to be during the day. I think it's a good thing. Should be available in all cities. Santa Cruz is enlightened in having it. Needs a lot of improvements, needs expansion, but it's good. Let's also say that the management of that group, the Homeless Community Resource Center, should be open to public comment. But unfortunately, its executive director, Karen Gillette, does not allow that. If you want to go to a board meeting, you will not be able to walk into one of their board meetings. You have to get a special screening from Karen Gillette, and you will be censored and shoehorned into a special area, ushered in and ushered out. You will not be able to see their process in action. And you will not be able to be a part of it unless she thinks you have something to say that they want to hear. And I've been fighting this for the last 6 months with letters to their board saying, look, you've got to have an open comment period for the community, the homeless, and the homeless advocates. It should be open, particularly since they're considering expanding the Homeless Community Resource Center to deal with the so-called Community House Trailer Project. This is the project that displaced the Coral Street Open Air Shelter, the only campground, homeless campground in Santa Cruz, successful homeless campground we've ever really had, which lasted throughout 1994 and 95 and accommodated anywhere between 70 and 300 people at different times in its history. Instead, we have a barren field right next door to Karen Gillette's Homeless Community Resource Center, which people cannot go on to. It's locked. It's you don't go on that on penalty of arrest. And the field which once served men, women, and children, homeless people, in significant numbers, has lain locked for a year and a half. Karen Gillette has not offered to run the program or put her support behind it. People who own the property, the Citizens Committee for the Homeless, has refused to help that program out. They ran it before and then closed it down in violation of the promises made to the homeless community about how long it would last. And then Michael Rotkin, when he was mayor, deported the homeless population, either dispersing them to the bushes, forcing them to go to the armory if they wanted any kind of legal shelter, or else sending them off to New Brighton Beach, where they were given 2 weeks and then kissed off. Became the River Street Refugees. That's sort of old history, which I continue to remind listeners of on the air, because it's something we shouldn't forget. A significant part of what's happened here in Santa Cruz, and something we have to understand as we proceed in this whole debate. Citizens Committee for the Homeless recently tried to reopen that campground. Catherine Byers opposed it. She wouldn't even take the issue to City Council, even though she admitted it was feasible, economically feasible. It would be cheap. It would be efficient. There were no, environmental problems that would stop it, though one has to admit that that particular property is not the best, and homeless people opposed that property for environmental reasons for the Community House Transitional Housing Project. What that is a 10-trailer project for 40 people, which is going to cost upward of $2 million if you include construction and the first couple years of operation to run, and still hasn't been built. And this is, it was supposed to be found, it started in 1991. Every year they postponed it. It's the man who originally started it, Page Smith, significant historian and founding patriarch of the Citizens Committee for the Homeless, has insisted his name not be on the project. He died several years ago, but he refused to have his name on the project, giving you some indication of what he thought of what was going on around that issue. And the city has been pumping hundreds of thousands of dollars into this project, but it can't find $20,000 or $30,000 for a campground. You know, it's interesting. It shows you how much real concern the city council has for real homeless needs. They don't want to provide an amnesty for sleeping tickets. They don't want to provide a moratorium on future arrests until there is a legal shelter. Instead, they want to throw a lot of money at the community house project. Anyway, the Homeless Community Resource Center is now, because of the CCH, the Citizens Committee for the Homeless, has been doing so badly with it, they're talking about merging the boards or getting them together to run the projects. And so it's very important that there be an open process. Citizens Committee for the Homeless, while it's barred me from their meetings at different times, does have semi-open meetings. You can go to their board meeting once a month. Much good may it do you. The Karen Gillette's Homeless Community Resource Center don't even think about that. You have the board meetings are made officially closed after I attempted to get into those meetings by requesting it on through different letters. And I was made the scapegoat of that whole situation when Metro Santa Cruz reported that the reason that they were closing their meetings was to stop disruptive influences like me. I've been to one of their meetings. I was given 5 minutes along with a bunch of other speakers that came to talk about asking the board to favor changes in the sleeping ban law, and then they ushered us in and they ushered us out, and we certainly weren't disruptive. We were very polite and I thought pretty articulate and pretty concise, and then we heard nothing further. Karen Gillette and her board have had nothing to say to the city council about changing the sleeping ban law officially, while the Citizens Committee for the Homeless, though it's refused to do anything recently, has a long-standing tradition of opposing the camping ban law. Not just the sleeping ban, but the camping ban, the whole law, which makes it illegal to survive outdoors, even though there's no legal places indoors or in Santa Cruz for people to be and who are here and who are homeless. So the homeless issue isn't dead. Homeless advocates are getting together to issue an alternate report on the what's going on or what's not going on. The Sentinel actually came out with a headline that the city council was not going to change the camping ban, not going to even consider research anything around it, and more important, they were also ignoring needs for expanded emergency shelter. The council decided they weren't going to look into a car park, they weren't going to look into an emergency campground. The only thing they were going to do is to see if the armory was going to be available next winter, and push for that. So the current emergency, which is happening tonight, tomorrow night, every night this week, every night this month, every night till the end of the year, and every night for every year thereafter in the discernible future, they don't seem to care about, or they're not certainly not going to take any action on. And there was the additional slap in the face that they were going to look into the public bathroom situation. Now, this is a big joke to those of us who have been following it, because every time we bring this issue up, and we've been bringing it up for years, but most recently and systematically, we were meeting with Celia Scott and Catherine Byers, our great liberals on the city council. We kept asking them about the issue, and they were telling us, oh, it's at the next budget committee meeting. Oh, you know, it's at the next, there's going to be an FYI about that. Oh, it's just right down the road. This was, I'm remembering late fall of 1995, and it's endlessly postponed. Endlessly postponed. There's been some talk of a two-hour expansion of the bathrooms at the Metro, at the Soquel Street area, the downtown Soquel bathrooms. But the nighttime bathrooms that we've been looking for and that they've been talking about doing at the Locust Street garage have gone nowhere. It's just not happening. So, that's the bad news, and we need to know the bad news so we can press to turn the circumstances around and create some good news. While I appreciate Celia Scott's occasional comments on this issue, I appreciate her minority position, I find myself just constantly depressed that what she does is so limited, you know. And I guess it's like your champion on a white horse is, you know, turns out to be a white rabbit. It's hard. And Celia and I have difficulties for this reason. But I do commend her for mentioning it, and I do commend Catherine Byers, for example, for pressing on some issues as well. But the problem is the entire council doesn't want to deal with this and will not deal with this until they're forced to deal with this by public response, by public outcry, by public demonstration. So maybe showing up today at the June 1st demonstration might not be such a bad idea at 7 o'clock tonight on Sunday. And that's down at the memorial right in front of the across from the Veterans Building at the statue. I think that's might be a good first step. Plus, keep your eyes on what's going on around the curfew. That's coming back, the first city council meeting in June, I suspect. At least we've got to keep our eyes on that agenda. Unfortunately, agendas don't usually come out until 4 o'clock Friday, the Tuesday before this stuff happens. So you really have to keep a close watch on what goes on. The curfew law was rejected 3 years ago when they passed the sit on the sidewalk, go to jail law. Now the Public Safety Subcommittee has come back with a refashioned teen curfew ordinance covering youth 16 or under. Actually, it may not be the first meeting in June, maybe the second meeting in June, but as I said, keep watching. They're calling it the Child Protection Ordinance. It was endorsed unanimously by Kennedy, Hernandez, and our old pal Mary Beth Conservative Campbell. It would prohibit people 17 years old or younger from being out on the streets in the late night and early morning hours. And it would prohibit being in a public place unless you're accompanied by an adult between 11 and 5, require hotels or motels to call the police if anyone 16 or younger registers without an adult guardian. As I said, there are certain exceptions to this. If you're on an errand at the direction of your parents or guardians, if you're returning directly home from a school, religious, cultural, sporting event, a movie or other entertainment, organized rally, demonstration, or meeting, if you're engaged in a lawful job or going to and from that job without detours, if you're in a vehicle involved in interstate travel, acting in response to an emergency on a sidewalk next to your home, waiting on a train or bus station for transportation, or if you're legally declared an adult emancipated from your parents. This is about supposedly preventing teen crime, according to Police Chief Belcher. But as I said, there were no invitations to critics of this ordinance to come to the Public Safety Subcommittee. It was the usual progressive machine done deal. And it ain't progressive, folks, to do it that way. It also precludes people 16 or under from driving aimlessly after 11 o'clock. Said Kennedy, that makes a difference for me, according to this article by Karen Clark in the May 28th Santa Cruz Sentinel. Anyway, it's a big puff piece for the curfew. Now, most of you know, perhaps, that there is a county curfew now, which makes it illegal for people 17 or under, essentially under the same circumstances, to be out. And we haven't heard too much in the way of cries of alarm from the ACLU on this issue or complaints. And that's, you have to note that, but we have talked to teenagers. There was a rally at Loudoun Nelson Center day before yesterday on May 30th. And at that rally, we talked to a number of teenagers who spoke out about the curfew, and I'm going to let them now speak for themselves.
Some kids who go out, they just want to have a good time, and they're not going to do anything wrong. They just want to be with their friends or study or do some other stuff. I mean, they're not going to be, like, doing anything wrong. I mean, someone could do something bad if 3 o'clock in the afternoon or in the morning. It doesn't really make a difference if they want to do something bad. But if someone wants to have, like, fun with their friends or do different stuff, then they should be able to.
Now, there's already a curfew in the county. Has this affected you?
Yeah, because then I can't, like, go to my friend's house, and if I'm not allowed to, like, spend the night there, then it's really hard for me to get back home unless my parents are willing to stay up late and then drive me back and forth or whatever.
So this interferes with your normal social relations with your friends?
Yeah, and just other stuff, too, if I wanted to stay and study or just plan on something or anything, I'd mess it up because we'd have to be home by, like, 10:30 or something.
And how old are you?
I'm 13.
And how does this curfew affect your friends? Do they feel similar to the way you do, or is there a diversity of opinion?
Well, I know all of them don't want it because it just messes things up, and makes it so that they can't go and do stuff. Because there's, like, sometimes there's, like, midnight movies and we can't go to that, or we can't, there's lots of different stuff that we couldn't do because the curfew. And, like, I was reading to other people saying how there's a steady thing that they would have to leave early, or places they'd have to, that were totally good, like, it was, like, non-drugs and everything, and they'd have to leave it early because the curfew.
Anything you want to add? Okay, good luck. I, too, oppose the curfew, and I agree. Thank you.
Jasmine Rosemary Schlafke.
And Jasmine, you're an African-American woman.
Yes, I am. Proud of it.
And you're a younger person.
Mm-hmm. 16.
You're 16. So you would be affected by the city curfew if it's passed the second Tuesday in June when it's scheduled to come before city council, right?
Yes.
Okay,
it affects me, the curfew and all this bull, whatever, affects me a lot because I work tons. And I'm putting on events like this all the time. And I'm out at night, and I'm walking, whether it be from a library or from a friend's house. I'm walking, and I think it's a ridiculous rule, considering how many youth that are homeless we have in this community. It's ridiculous.
And where are you going to send those homeless youth with a curfew? Home, but home where?
Exactly. That's why I figure it's ironic, and it doesn't make any sense.
Mm-hmm. Now, you know there's a curfew in the county currently. How does that affect you?
Well, it's the same thing. It's completely affected the way I get around at night. I have to call my mother, wake her out of bed. The woman is a single parent and works two jobs, so I have to wake her to come get me from studying. Now, I'm not out there gangbanging. I mean, come on. It's really ridiculous.
Now, do you think that... Were you the speaker that spoke about police abuse against minorities?
No, but I have plenty to say about that.
Tell me about that.
Well, when I first came here to Santa Cruz, I moved here 2 years ago from San Francisco, I noticed the cops and their attitudes against Latinos and African Americans in this community is incredibly negative. Being both, I walk around in the beach flats or just in a regular residential neighborhood, and I'll be harassed, asked if I have any weapons. I'll be searched. Completely feeling violated when my white friends that are with me are not going through the same process with the cops. They're not being searched, and they're not being asked questions like, do you have guns, do you have whatever? And I think it's just stupid. And, this, you know, upholding the justice is a job that should be done, and it's not.
When was the last time this happened to you?
I would say a week ago.
And tell me about that instance.
Okay, what happened was I was at the boardwalk with my godchild, Starla, and I was just taking on the rides, and her godfather came to pick her up. I waited, and I ran into a couple of friends being Caucasian. We walked down Ocean Street, and the cops stopped us just out of
City
nowhere.
City police?
City police.
What did they
Santa
say?
Cruz. They asked us if we were drunk under the influence, if we had... Let me rephrase this. They asked me if I was drunk or under the influence, if I had any weapons. My friends were left to sit on the bench a couple of feet away, and I was then searched against their car.
Now, what time of day was this?
This was 6 o'clock in the evening.
And were there any witnesses to this other than your friends?
No, sir.
And do you know the names
and
of the cops?
No, sir. I did, however, complain to the... I had their number of the police car, and I complained to the... police.
Did you file a complaint with the Citizens Police Review Board?
No, sir.
Would you like to do that?
I don't know if I have the number anymore, but I'll try. I do try to, that's what I mainly try to get out, is that people need to complain, you know what I mean? We can't just sit here and talk about our problems, we got to do something about it.
Right, quite so. If you made a complaint to the police department, they have the numbers and they should be able to forward that to the Citizen Police Review Board. And if you contact me on Monday, I'll show you how to do that. I'll give you my phone number how to do that.
Okay.
Well, how long has this event been going on? What's been happening here? Anything come out of this event that you're impressed with or not impressed with?
I'm not impressed at the show of people here. We need definitely a lot more people.
How many people showed up?
I would say about 40. About 40, and then there was organizations on top of that, so a total of about 60 people.
Only 15 or so teenagers.
Yeah.
Not many teenagers.
And I'm most impressed with the solutions a lot of people gave. I'm going to write up all the solutions and problems that were presented and present them to the school board and the mayor. I hope it's effective.
What What were the main problems and what were the main solutions that came out of this meeting?
The main problems would be, we talked about sexism, homophobia, racism, and violence. What else?
Discrimination against young people.
Discrimination, yeah, against ageism. Our main solutions, we're setting up a council that's going to deal, a task force that's going to deal with these type of things, keep on presenting more solutions to the school board. We also came up with tons of new contacts. We're going to make up a resource guide for teens in this county. We did this board here that basically...
Speak your mind.
Just speak your mind. What do you think? People just said whatever, recited poetry, did whatever, and through that, we plan to make a list of quotes from young people as part of our presentation to the school board.
And when are you going to do your presentation to the board?
I'm assuming in 3 weeks to a month.
Better get your butts to city council in that week from Tuesday, or you'll have a curfew and you'll have to do it before 11 o'clock at night.
Okay.
Should anyone call you, who's listening to Free Radio Santa Cruz, if they want to help you out? Or?
I just want to throw out a couple numbers. 457-1163 is the Santa Cruz AIDS Project's drop-in center. We have free testing there Tuesdays through Wednesdays, and it's a great place just to hang out. The other days are just normal days. There's food there usually, and it's somewhere to sit and get resources for the county.
Tell people where this is.
That's at 412 Front Street, right across from the Metro Center. It's the old Kinko's, the gray and green building. It's funded by the Santa Cruz AIDS Project, 427-3900.
And you work for that project.
I work for that project.
I understand there have been some harassment of needle exchange people recently. Is that still happening?
Yeah, let me speak about that.
Sure.
The thing about that is when it comes down to it, you just got to fuck safe and shoot clean, you know. Needle exchange is saving people's lives. 40,000 needles are being given to us per month. Statistics show that one-third of those needles will be infected, so we are saving lives. We've got some police harassment, but basically they know not to fuck with us because they know that we are saving lives and that Santa Cruz is notorious for injection drug use.
Now, a needle exchange worker in Berkeley told me that Santa Cruz needle exchange has been particularly harassed, having gotten four or more citations for the last, I don't know, 4 or 5 months.
Last thing I heard was five citations. It's ridiculous. It really is. I believe...
When was the last citation you heard of?
It was a couple weeks ago. Most of the things have been held off in court, so we're not...
Are you being driven from bridge to bridge? I mean, are you able to go to the places where people gather, or are police stopping you from doing that?
We are. We keep on changing the schedule. Everybody should know that the schedule is posted on the drop-in center's window on their front door, but it does change weekly, unfortunately. I'm all for the legalization of needle exchange. It should be legalized, and it should be pushed by our president and the government itself.
You've heard, of course, about the upcoming demonstration on Sunday by the Revolutionary Coalition. That's Jim Costner over here. He's demonstrating on behalf of the rights of homeless people,
mm-hmm.
and also the Navajo, the Diné people,
mm-hmm.
Who are the big mountain folks who are getting hassled.
Isn't Pride on Sunday too? Gay Pride?
Possibly so. I know that 7 p.m., that's when the demonstration is happening with the homeless rights issue. And that'll be happening at 7 o'clock at the monument right across from the Veterans Hall, if you know where that is, the stone
yes,
monument.
Yes, I do.
Well, getting back, though, to youth, who is this woman over here?
This is Wendy Harris.
What is she doing here?
She is one of our devoted youth that came to see us. She's 17 years old and attends Harbor High.
Harbor High, is that a hotbed of resistance to oppression of youth, or just a bunch of apathetic doodads?
I'd say by the turnout here, apathetic doodads. Uh-huh. A lot of people say a lot about we need these rights, we want these rights, but most people aren't allowed to work, aren't willing to work for them like Jasmine does. Jasmine is active in so many things in this community that really do all of this kind of thing for the youth in this community.
Much hassling of young people for, let's say, marijuana use?
Are you Wendy Harris?
Oh, yeah, lots of harassment. We recently had, I don't know if this is a good story to tell, but we recently had a student at our school who was having a 420 raffle, which...
Is that in the paper?
Yeah.
tell the audience about it.
It was a raffle that one of the students was putting on without school support entirely, Chris Schaefer, and... And he was raffling off various drugs and drug paraphernalia.
By drugs, you mean marijuana or heroin?
Marijuana. Oh, no.
You're talking about herbs rather than drugs,
well,
I see.
Yeah. Illegal drugs in the legal sense. Mm-hmm. And he got expelled for the rest of this year and next year. When there wasn't... He didn't really do anything yet. There's a lot of... They're always checking people. They're searching people. People get suspended for it.
Have you been searched at school?
Personally, no, I haven't, but I know a lot of people that have. My backpack did get searched.
So how frequently are you, should we say, denied the rights ordinary citizens have when you go to school?
When I go to school? I'd say quite a bit. They do a lot of things. They search people. I'd say most of the things, though, is outside of school. The teachers seem to have a lot more respect for the young people because they do know so many people, and they do realize that just because you're teenagers doesn't mean that you are unintelligent or irresponsible or wild like a lot of people think you are.
How much more time in the school term is left for Harbor High?
I think next week, and then the week after that is finals.
10 days.
So you have 10 days to organize resistance
Countdown,
to the curfew.
Baby.
You're going to start circulating those petitions?
Yes, sir.
Totally.
We'll circulate any petition that needs to be done.
Well, you're going to have to draw it up and circulate it, but I think if enough students stand up and say what they feel about this issue and explain why they think the curfew is a mistake, the city council is going to have a hard time passing it. But if you don't stand up, it will go right through like shit through a goose.
Well, I don't have such a big problem with the curfew if people are just hanging out. The problem is that they go into businesses and they tell them teenagers cannot be there after 11. That's where the teenagers in this town are not getting into trouble. Then they go and they make them kick people out. I don't go home, I go party.
Yeah.
You know, nobody goes home. If you're kicked out of one place, you go to another place. If you're not allowed to do something that's legal and that's good and that you're keeping out of trouble doing something constructive, you'll go do other things.
Do you have any friends in the county?
Friends in the county?
Yes. In other words, the county has a curfew. And I'm wondering how the curfew is affecting any of your friends who are in the county, outside the city. There's a curfew against...
I live outside the county, outside the city.
Oh, sorry.
Every single weekend, I'm kicked out of Fast Eddie's. They have the Capitol Police. I remember the first time that they had been cited for it. The Capitol Police came in, rounded everybody out, kicked everybody out, and made us all call our parents.
And what is this place?
Fast Eddie's. It's in Capitola. It's a billiards. You go play pool.
Mm-hmm.
It's a pool parlor, basically. Then from now, since they did that, they come in. The police don't come in as much, but the bartenders and the waitresses do check IDs of everyone. If it is 11 o'clock, you have to leave. I'm usually there with responsible adults. I'm there with people who are up to 30 years old. If it's not your parent or guardian, you have to leave.
You want to say something?
No.
I have something to say. Basically, I find that the Capitola police are more discriminatory against teenagers than the Santa Cruz police. Curfew is supposed to be in effect, but it's not being really enforced in such places as SLV and Boulder Creek and Scotts Valley. I find that it's most enforced in dense neighborhoods of color or where many youth hang out. Such as beach flats or like such places as the boardwalk or Fast Eddie's, as she said.
Or Capitola, where they tell the police, and the police's main objective is to keep the teenagers out and keep the young people out so that they get the business of the older retired people that go there to vacation and the people that live there.
Okay. I got illegally searched by a male police officer.
Your name is?
My name's Sarah.
And the name of the cop who searched you?
Sandoval. His last name's Sandoval. I believe his first name is Dominic.
Is this a Santa Cruz police officer or
I believe Capitola police officer.
We don't like Capitola police. They're mean.
And another thing that happened to my friend, actually, I believe it was downtown. He got a jaywalking ticket. He got convicted, had to pay the fine and everything. He took it to court, but he got a ticket for jaywalking in a cross... One of those things. I can't think of what it's called.
Crosswalks.
Yeah. He got a ticket for that. And he had to pay. I don't know how much it was, but...
Hundreds.
Ticket.
Sure.
No,
police giving tickets here.
In a crosswalk. Not even a streetlight crosswalk. Just a crosswalk. Across.
Actually, in a crosswalk. So it was completely unfair, the ticket.
Yeah.
Were you a witness or was this a report?
I wasn't. This is a report. He told me this.
But if you do notice, the police down here do not hassle the older tourists or the older people that are down here. I was sitting on a bench with one leg under me, sitting there. A police officer comes by and says, if you're not going to sit on that bench properly, then you can't stay here. Move on.
How long ago was this?
a couple months. They do it to everybody.
And has this deterred you from sitting in your own fashion on benches?
No. Good. It's, you sit how you sit.
Your name again is?
Wendy Harris.
And Wendy, it's, if young people listening to this broadcast are interested in contacting you, should they call you?
If you call the Santa Cruz AIDS Project and you ask to talk to Jasmine, I'm sure that they could take care of it through those.
And the number of that Jasmine gave for the Santa Cruz?
427-3900.
So if you're interested in fighting laws that oppress youth, do give a call to the Santa Cruz AIDS Project, 427-3900. Thank you very much.
And those were three women leading a teen rally, a teen speak out at Loudon Nelson Park on May 30th. At that rally was Marty Wormhout, our supervisor, previously mayor, who unsuccessfully led the fight to stop the curfew at the county level last year. I was a little concerned that possibly she might now favor the city curfew, since Scott Kennedy and others who opposed this curfew back in 1994, when it was part of the downtown ordinance package, sit on the sidewalk, go to jail, ask for spare change after dark, go to jail, and so forth. When it was part of that package, Kennedy and others severed it, and it didn't go through as part of that package. Now it's back. It may be slightly modified in that I guess they're now considering 17 or I guess a 16 or under. So I wondered if Marty had changed her view, and I found, according to her, that she had not. She told me she still opposed all such curfews. So the real question is whether liberal organizations who continue to support people like Rodkin and Kennedy are going to just sort of bend over for this one. We'll see what happens. Actually, what will probably happen is the city council will simply do it on its own, independently of other people, as they usually do, unless there's a large public outpouring, as there was, for example, in the Fishhook, when they made a change at the council meeting recently around that issue. And it's not just in Santa Cruz where people are gathering to discuss these issues of rights for young people, poor people, homeless people. In San Jose, on Memorial Day, May 26th, there was a rally in front of the Fairmont Hotel, a rally, prayer, and meal designed to alert the city to the realities of homelessness, to specifically the new onerous restrictions of the sitting ban in San Jose, which makes it illegal to sit down anywhere within a 66-block area downtown. First offense, you can get up to 6 months in jail and a $1,000 fine if you don't move along. And there's also a hotel there that is being kept vacant that could be used for affordable housing called the Montgomery Hotel. Let's tune in on that demonstration briefly.
Stevens.
And Roy, this looks like a pretty big turnout for the Community Homeless Alliance here.
Well, we just came up with it real quick, like, and got the word out as fast as we could, and here we are in Fairmont Plaza feeding homeless people.
Is there a particular theme today other than the usual folks being criminalized, folks being hungry, folks with no place to stay? What's the theme?
I think that we're going to once again walk around and have another look at the Montgomery Hotel and try to figure out some way to save that hotel for low-income homeless people that are out working every day or night and have no place to sleep.
Has it been condemned, or what's the story?
They claim asbestos. But here a couple of years ago, I was out at the City Hall, and when I mentioned that hotel, Mayor Susan Hammer snapped at me.
She snapped at you?
Earthquake damage. Mm. I wonder who's lying, huh? Who's lying here, huh?
I've never been to the hotel. I can't tell you. Have you actually seen the hotel recently? Or?
I've been on the outside. There's more asbestos signs on that thing than there is in the city of San Jose. Every old building that is in downtown San Jose has got some kind of asbestos. The De Anza, it was condemned because of asbestos and possible earthquake damages. But through the redevelopment agency and the Saratoga Capital Incorporated, they renovated and put who in there? Who?
Who did they put in there?
It stands vacant quite often.
I see. So you're feeling that the Montgomery Hotel is in fact Have you had any surveys done to demonstrate that, in fact, it is usable or not?
Well, if they can renovate the buildings that they've renovated downtown, they can also renovate that one.
It would be nice if these people actually wanted to occupy the Montgomery Hotel, wouldn't
it? Oh, wouldn't it be nice? Whoa, it'd be, yeah.
It looks like at least 100 people in line, is my guess.
And more will come.
And looks like, I'd say, a mixture of mostly, mixed minority and white.
Mm-hmm.
And you got a number of women here, too.
I guess.
Probably, one-fifth, one-fourth women.
Mm-hmm.
And older folks, younger folks, I don't see any children.
Teens, I see.
Some teens, yeah, I guess those are children. I mean, like, toddlers or, preteens.
The family shelters are open today because it's a holiday. I did try to invite the families down here, but because they're open, they choose to stay at home in a shelter.
What's the shelter space situation in San Jose?
They're always occupied. San Jose Family Shelter over on Las Plumas, maybe a year ago, the director made a statement at Help House Homeless Meeting that their staff turns 8 to 10 families away each day.
Wow. I see we also have the law has arrived. There are two uniformed officers with sunglasses on who are observing the proceedings. No shopping carts, I notice. I hear that shopping carts are becoming a rarity here in San Jose.
Homeless people are being targeted and getting ticketed as actual thieves. A $250 fine, I believe. If you go into any of such as Lucky's downtown here, because of the security guards, a homeless person can't go in there and steal a shopping cart. The real thieves are people that go in there and buy their food, take their food home, and leave the shopping cart there. The good guys are the homeless that pick up these shopping carts, recycle, go down, and leave the shopping carts, and makes it very convenient for the truck drivers to pick up the shopping carts.
Thank you, Rick.
Speaking.
All right, everything will be copacetic. And again, if you want to hang around when we're done, we're going to go to the Montgomery Hotel, an abandoned hotel, and have a prayer. Now, before we start eating, of course, since I'm a minister, I'm going to lead us in prayer. I would ask you pray for your brothers and sisters who are out on the streets, brothers and sisters who are Vietnam vets, who have fought and died for their country and end up living in a box. I would also ask that you be mindful of your surroundings, that you look up at the lavishness of this affluent city, that you look around and say, who is feeding the homeless today? A little church group. Where are the politicians? Where are those with the big money?
You're here.
Where are they?
Building some more jail.
We're here with you, as your brothers and sisters.
Oh.
First name.
Better remain anonymous. Chris is fine.
Chris, and what happened?
Oh, they told me that there was an ordinance that didn't allow you to sleep in your vehicle in Santa Clara. And asked me to be gone by the following day. They're very polite about it. They didn't violate my...
So you live in your vehicle?
Constitution. Yeah, I camp sometimes.
And how long had you been in Santa Clara?
I was there for about a week.
And had you been causing trouble, burning down buildings, assaulting pedestrians?
No. I've been working.
Right. So you were working. What kind of work were you doing?
I'm a carpenter.
And did they say there'd been a complaint, or were they just deciding to run you out for no particular reason?
No, they have an ordinance that they said it's against the law to camp in the city of Santa Clara.
So, is this a new law as far as you know? Have you been a Santa Clara visitor before?
No, it's the first I've ever heard of it.
I'd heard that Santa Clara had recently passed something like a no panhandling law or a no signing law, I'm not sure which. Maybe it was the camping law that I heard of and hadn't been aware of.
Yeah, I don't know. I work every day, so I don't generally get out amongst the public during the, I was just sleeping.
Carpenter makes a pretty good wage. Are you here in support of this demonstration? Are you here because of the food or both?
Both. I'm interest in food too. The weekends put me out of money quite a bit because there hasn't been any work over the holidays. So I'm not quite cushy enough to get through, you know, a weekend.
It smells good, whatever they got up there. Thanks, sure. Chris.
Thank you.
What's your name?
Sandy.
And Sandy, what happened?
Did you harass me because I'm sick and, you know, and I need my marijuana and you know, I belong to the club and the cops harassed me and threw me down. I got hurt real bad again.
When was this?
It was a couple of weeks ago.
Well, you're a user of a cannabis club, which
yes.
is legal under Proposition 215.
Yeah. Yes, it is.
And
I get harassed every time about when I go.
How many times have you been harassed at the club?
Not at the club when I go out, but people don't, like the cops don't like it, and they don't, you know, they don't they push me down real bad one time.
Albert, physically abusing?
Yeah, physically abusing me. Yeah, I don't appreciate that because I'm mentally ill, and I don't need to pick on because I have grand mal seizures.
And how many times, your name again is?
Sandy.
Sandy. How many times, Sandy, has this happened to you? Have you estimated?
About four times.
And have you been hospitalized as a consequence
of that? Oh, yeah, I went to the hospital and got my hand checked in his bed.
You're rubbing your left wrist. Was it injured?
Yes, it is.
You know the name of the police officer who did this to you?
No, I don't, because I was out of it. I blacked out at the time.
You have grand mal seizures,
yeah,
you're saying?
Yeah.
You know there's a no-sitting law coming into effect in San Jose. You heard about that law?
No.
There's a law that's going to make it illegal to sit down downtown except in parks. What's your reaction to that? Is that a good idea or a bad idea?
Well, it's a good idea because people got freedom, you know, what they want to do.
Well, what they're going to tell you is you will not be able to sit down or they'll arrest you.
That's not right. That's not right, though. I don't think it's right.
I agree.
It's not right at all because, hey, we got as much of freedom as they do. So what if they wear uniforms? They're going to arrest us real bad. They throw me down and see me.
Apparently, Scott and Nancy have way less food than they need to feed all the hungry people that have shown up here. And this is the only feeding program that's available in the whole city of San Jose today, Memorial Day, you know, a city of over 800,000 population. We were thinking maybe going up to the Fairmont and asking them if they had any extra food.
That's a good idea.
A lot of hungry people out here. And maybe we could do some, you know.
Yeah.
John Tranbarger. I was one of the people that helped Brad Traynor open the Back 40 at River Street.
Some time ago. What
yeah.
year was that?
Let me think. It's been at least 3 years.
So, yeah, that was 94 probably when they actually had a permitted campground
Kennedy
in
gave
Santa
us
Cruz.
The permit. Yeah, when Mr. Kennedy or whatever his name.
You weren't there when Mr. Kennedy removed everybody from the lot, probably.
No,
yes.
No.
That was 2 years later in 1995.
Yeah, and also, you know, I'm one of Dennis's old squatters from 83. Up in the city, and glad to be here. I finally got off the streets. It took me 4.5 years of working full-time before I could afford a place, you know, and I lucked into a place I could share a room for $200 a month.
That's
but,
good.
Yeah, it is good. I'm working full-time. I got 3 other homeless people off the streets.
Congratulations.
For a good length of time.
This is about food services in San Jose. You know pretty much about what's available each day. Are food services available for people here in San Jose?
Yeah, but it needs to be a lot more. It needs to be more places and more. Like in Sacramento, it's one place everybody goes to. Loads of pictures. Everybody knows where to go. Or if they don't know where to go, they ask somebody and they find out. You know,
right.
There needs to be a lot more places like that. Here, it's like a couple places like hit or miss. You know, there's places, but there needs to be a lot more. There needs to be places to take showers and to have food, clothing, that kind of stuff. You know, a lot more resources, but there's not enough.
So on an average day, I mean, I see at least 100 people in this line. How many meals are available? I mean, if you want to get something to eat, is you're likely to get it on an average day in San Jose? Or no?
Yeah, but it takes a long time. You have to do a lot of walking, a lot of searching and stuff like that. You have to go to Satine, which is way out on Bayshore Road, towards Milpitas, which is a long walk. First time down there, there's any bus fare, and that takes a long time. It takes an average of half an hour walk or more. And there's nothing really downtown except for the shelters and all that. You have to wait till, I think, 6 o'clock at night to be served and all that. And then Tuesday, Wednesday, it's Martha's Kitchen. That's pretty good. That's a long walk, too. That's a half an hour walk, too. So basically, nothing really downtown except for the shelters. You know, there needs to be a lot more.
So you say someone you know was actually physically struck by a police officer in the park recently.
In the park recently. Got socked in the eye for not giving up his ID.
And we're talking about an African-American man.
African-American.
Shot by a white cop or an African-American man?
I'm not for certain. He really didn't go into details, but, you know.
And this was this guy being abusive to the police officer? Was he hitting him?
No, he was just being, you know what I'm saying, he was being cooperative, you know what I'm saying? And more or less, he wanted to, you know, to cooperate, and the police officer just socked him in his eye, I guess, to prove a point that, you know, I'm better than you, you know what I'm saying? That you're lower than me.
I'm stronger, I'm more powerful,
yeah,
you do what I say.
Yeah, because I'm the law, you have to do what I say regardless, you know? And I don't feel that's right. I feel that's unjust, and I feel that this police force has a very negative attitude, the homeless and toward the public. Because, you know, it's like you can walk down the street, man, and if you're wearing the wrong color, you know what I'm saying, they'll harass you. You know what I'm saying? It's been known to happen.
So what do you think of the idea of going into the Fairmont and asking for food
if we run out of food?
And Alan, you're with Food Not Bonds?
Yes, I am.
And you're?
Cindy.
And you're with Food Not Bonds?
Yes.
So is this a plot, Cindy? Are you leading this man astray? Is that what's going on?
I think so. I think that's what it is, yeah.
And you both were workers with San Jose Food Not Bonds several years ago, and I think you had a contretemp with the city government then. They were demanding you get a permit, and then they finally gave you a permit or something?
You know what? I'm not really sure.
But you're serving food anyway, even though you don't know what the rules are.
Exactly.
So you just want to get people fed. Is that the idea?
I think that's about it.
Why in these public places? This is so embarrassing. Why not just hustle them off to the side of town where no one will notice?
They're not there. And they're here.
So you go where the people are, right?
Sure.
Wouldn't it be better if we simply removed all homeless people from the downtown areas and put them in special holding camps where they could be adequately fed and housed until they died of natural causes?
Well, but then we'd find a better use for those housing camps and have to move them somewhere else.
Well, you know, that civilization marches on.
Yes.
Heinz,
Me and my friends, we did a food, like kind of like a homeless benefit, kind of same thing that Food Not Bonds did, except we bought most of the food and got it ourselves.
Are you going to do some cooking now?
We're going to do cooking. That's what started it. And then it kind of, that group of friends kind of evolved into Food Not Bonds. And
you going to come with us as we march to the Montgomery Hotel and attempt to get these clowns to open up some housing?
Are you guys going
to
march right now?
Well, we're going to march, skip, gamble, crawl, and wander, I think.
Today? I'm going to be here.
All right, we're walking up by the Montgomery across, incidentally, from the San Jose Chamber of Commerce. And what is there with this hotel? What's it all about?
They just don't want... Scott Nancy from the Community Homeless Alliance has been fighting for this for 7 years now. And we already went in and checked it out. There's nothing wrong with it. People could just knock the door down and go in there tonight and sleep. It's just sitting here, empty rooms, 144 rooms. And now they're telling us they're going to tear it down, because they're tired of us marching and demonstrating to get the building opened.
So who owns it?
The city owns it.
The city owns it, but the city doesn't want to use it. What do they want to say? Tear it down and put it in a jewelry store? What do they want to do?
Probably another Save Mart or something that people can't use. Because when you're homeless, you don't have that much money to buy food, so I don't know where they're going to... that's like the movie thing down here.
Right.
I can't think of the name of it. $10 million. Across the street, they're building a theater. Like a drama theater.
Right.
Now, what do we need with those? They're trying to run the homeless out by August the 31st. They've already said that they're going to build a fence around the St. James Park because they want all the homeless people out by August 31st.
Wow. So it's time to mobilize, eh?
Oh, yes. I mean, because September, we're going to have more homeless because of the welfare reform.
This is the Montgomery Hotel here. This is it right here.
Yeah.
Danger, asbestos, cancer, and lung disease hazard, authorized personnel only. Respirators and protective clothing are required in this area. You say this is not true?
That's not true.
How do we know?
Because we've had people go in and check it out.
Really? Experts?
Yeah, experts.
But not only in San Jose are demonstrations happening, but Santa Barbara and Santa Monica. We also have reports from those areas. Santa Barbara had two demonstrations last week against their sit down on State Avenue, go to jail. We'll have much more on that hopefully in a future show, assuming we have a future show. Tune in next week at 11 o'clock to find out. Here's a report from Santa Monica from articulate homeless activist Jennifer Wagoner.
Hey, hi, we're on the line. This is Jennifer Wagoner. Hi, Jennifer.
Hi there.
And we're talking to you in lovely, sunny Santa Monica.
It's lovely, sunny, and hot here in Santa Monica, mostly breezeless.
Okay, and you're quite well acquainted with the homeless situation in Santa Monica, and you've spent several years being homeless there yourself.
Yes, I have.
And
And currently I do homeless political activism here in Santa Monica. We have a meals distribution program where individuals, we all get together and we serve about 3 days a week, about 200 people every time we go out, and you know, to distribute free meals to poor people. And we also have a community group called Side by Side, which is...
Wait, giving away free food?
Can you believe that?
Isn't that outlawed in the parks, in Santa Monica in particular?
Well, what's really interesting about it is that we have a police escort every time we go and we do our meals at Palisades Park. At 4 o'clock, you know, you can drive up, and you can see people lined up all the way down the park past the statue of St. Monica in the park. And basically, if they pass St. Monica, we know we're like 200 plus. And so then you'll see cop cars everywhere, and they pretty much surround us, and they're walking to and fro, back and forth, and, you know, looking through the line at people, and, you know, basically...
People are more dangerous when they're fed.
Oh, absolutely. You know, a riot can break out over the bagels. And so, you know, we basically don't have any real problems with the officers other than their attitudes. But, you know, we do get an escort. And we have people in white shirts and tags. They come around and they just kind of look. And, you know, sometimes we wish that they would just come and, like, volunteer, you know, and, like, serve some food and maybe hang out and talk with people. But they really don't do a whole lot of that. They just look.
Have they been arresting anyone for feeding in the park?
Not as of yet.
It is illegal, though, right?
It is illegal. And what they're doing now is they're trying to pull suspects out of the line. And so far, they've done it 3 times here in Santa Monica. The Santa Monica Police Department has come and has singled out people in our lines and have interrogated them, taken their information, run them through the computer, and then it would turn out that that person was the wrong person. That wasn't the person they were looking for. So, they keep thinking that they're going to get these criminals in our lines, but it hasn't happened yet.
It's quite common for homeless people to wind up having warrants up for their arrest from, say, sleeping tickets or sitting tickets, if they didn't take care of their warrants.
Every single day, I have a homeless person who comes to me and says, I got a ticket for this. And mostly it's because they are homeless that they're receiving citations for sleeping in the park.
Is it illegal to sleep in Santa Monica?
It is illegal to sleep in the parks in Santa Monica. It is illegal to sit or lay down in and on the 3rd Street Promenade, which is the main business district here in Santa Monica. And you can't really sleep in doorways or alleyways or on sidewalks. You can't sleep on private property without the owner's permission. You can't sleep on city streets. You can't sleep on the light poles. So, in a sense, in your car, it is against the law in the state of California to sleep in your vehicle. So they've got that covered, too.
Oh, that's the state law.
Yeah, that's state. Yes, and everybody can enforce that one. So, but basically, it is against the law. They don't actually say, no, it is not against the law to sleep in Santa Monica. But you go and you try to sleep anywhere, and you won't get a decent night's rest. You know, if you have no ability to afford to rent a space to sleep.
And how much shelter space do you have for homeless people?
It is estimated that we have approximately 300 shelter beds. I'd say about half of those are crisis, you know, like immediate emergency kind of shelter beds. But those shelter beds are all full right now with a waiting list, each and every one of like 2 weeks or so. And
that's a long time to stay awake.
Yeah, I know, huh? And the RAND Corporation estimates that on any given night in Santa Monica, there are approximately 2,500 homeless people. And so there are only maybe 300 available shelter beds.
Yeah.
Yeah, so if they're full, you know, what happens to the other, you know, 2,200? is what we ask.
And what is the approximate population in Santa Monica?
I think it's about, I'm not sure, maybe 10,000? More than that.
Right. Well, Santa Cruz is 50,000.
Oh, so definitely more than...
Santa Barbara is about 200,000.
I know we're 10 square miles. That I do know. So I'll have to ask that the next time you ask me.
More accurate report next time around.
Yes, exactly.
Okay, and do you have any laws in Santa Monica regulating panhandlers?
Yes, we do. No aggressive panhandling laws. And basically, that covers persons who, and it's also happening in Los Angeles as well, not just Santa Monica, but they are considering panhandling as a new law, even though there are laws on the books that prevent anyone from being abusive towards you, cursing, screaming. If you're drunkenness in public, there's a law for that. And basically, they're saying that it's to keep people from aggressively panhandling. But any person that you've ever known that is aggressively panhandled has broken other laws. And so they would be arrestable under any law.
They would be already, say...
Yeah, they would already be suspect.
Assault or battery or
yes.
Like that.
Absolutely. So...
Obstructing a sidewalk. Yeah. They didn't let a person pass.
They have a whole host of laws that they can modify.
Right.
In the moment. But this particular...
So this is a law that they're proposing in Santa Monica?
It's already done in Santa Monica, and it's being proposed in Los Angeles.
I see. And so do you happen to know that the restrictions on panhandling in that current ordinance?
In that ordinance, I couldn't read it off the top of my head. But from what I know of it, you cannot come within 5 feet of an individual. You cannot... Yeah, 5 feet. And you cannot get into their space. You cannot raise your voice. And basically, if a person...
You whisper from 5 feet away.
Yeah. Can I not?
Then you're legal, huh?
Yes. Yes, it is. And they're even taking people's signs away from them, which is a very interesting gray area that no one has talked about at this point legally. Is it okay for an officer of the law to take someone's sign if there are freedom of speech issues involved in a person starving to death on a street corner somewhere and asking for help? Most of this stuff is being held up in the courts. There's been one challenge to the panhandling law, and I think it was actually upheld. Because the case wasn't strong enough. But,
And that's it for Bathrobes Broadsides for today, June 1st. Tune in next Sunday at 11 o'clock, 96.3 FM, Free Radio. I hope we'll be here, but who knows what's going to happen. More information on supporting those opposing the curfew, give a call to 423-HUFF, 423-4833, or if you have something you want to add for the next show, if it happens. Tonight at 7 o'clock, join a demonstration on behalf of the rights of the homeless in front of the statue at the head of the mall. Thanks, and have a good day.